From a dark, dark room in the dark, dark WXXI studios, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when producer Megan Mack was working late. Now, maybe you've heard her voice on the show once in a while, but let me ask you. Have you ever actually seen Megan Mack in person? Very few people have. I have probably seen her once or twice. I thought it was strange, and so did our colleagues in the newsroom. And last week, we finally found out why. It all started when reporter Sasha Ann Simons offered Megan a ride home.
It was a cold and rainy night. I was on my way back from covering a story when I saw Megan standing near her car. It had a flat tire. She didn't look too happy. Hey, Mac, do you want a ride?
Yes, thank you. I live near the cemetery.
You're soaking wet. Here, take my jacket. After that, we didn't talk. It wasn't unusual. She's not a woman of many words. When I pulled into her driveway, she rushed out of the car.
Thanks for the ride.
Sure, keep the jacket. I'll get it tomorrow. I saw her walk into the shadows, and then I drove home. I didn't think anything of it until she wasn't at work the next day. It was cold and I needed my jacket, so I decided to stop by her place during my lunch hour. A man came to the door. Is Megan here? I came to pick up my jacket. He looked at me in a strange way.
It must have been another woman. Megan's been dead for almost a year. She's buried in the cemetery.
I told him how sorry I was, and I left. I didn't know what to think. The next morning, I went to the cemetery. I wanted to see Megan's grave. Lying across the grave was my jacket.
The truth is out about Megan Mack. The story you just heard is actually our own adaptation. And it's from an author named Alvin Schwartz. Now, maybe that name rings a bell, maybe it doesn't, but Alvin Schwartz is the author of a series of books called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark turns 35 years old this year. And Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark topped the American Library Association's list of the top 100 most frequently challenged books in the 1990s. A decade later, it remained in the top 10, coming in at number 7 as the most banned or challenged book series. The books were most frequently challenged for reasons of insensitivity, occultism or Satanism, violence, and being unsuited for the age group. I wonder why that is. Maybe it has to do with the fact that there is a scarecrow that murders someone and puts the skin to dry on a roof while everyone watches. I don't know. But we thought we would have some fun this hour talking about the scary stories to tell in the dark. It is Halloween, after all. And with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark turning 35, some questions for you. Did you read the books growing up? Would you let your kids read them now? As we get older, do we think they're less appropriate, or are we just being soft here? Or why do we like to be scared? That's another interesting question. Our panel is going to help us with this. The expert in the room is Ethan Green. He is 12 years old, a fan. Ethan, get right on that microphone. I'll say hello. Are you, you're off school today for this?
Yes.
Oh, this is a good deal. This is a good deal.
Special snowflake.
So you had a chance to read the books. You're going back to even when you were, what, 9, 10 years old?
I haven't read them for a while, but...
For a while. You're 12, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 12. I haven't read them in a while, but I remember a lot of them, like High Beams and The Hook
One. Oh, yes.
Those are the most commonly repeated one. But I refreshed this weekend.
Okay, yeah. We're going to catch up on some of our favorites. Christine Green is related to Ethan Green. Christine toted him. She's a literary arts columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. It's nice to have you as well.
Hi.
Did you read the books growing up?
You know, it's funny. I was just talking about this. I did not read them growing up, but I know all the stories.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny?
When I was a kid.
They're out in the culture in different places, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I read a book that my dad had on urban legends. I was just telling these guys beforehand that later when Scary Stories came up with my kids, I said, well, I know these already because they were in this folklore book. So, yeah, I like to be scared young.
Chris Fanning is with Writers and Books, and Chris reads far and wide, but I wonder, growing up, was this in the repertoire for you?
This is in my top canon of books all year long in the library.
Why for you? I mean, do you remember how young you were when you picked them up?
Well, it's funny that you led with that story from In a Dark, Dark Room. That was one of my top favorite books, first book I ever read by myself. And so these books, these scary stories to tell in the dark, must have been my step up after In a Dark, Dark Room.
Yeah, that was like the training wheels.
Yeah. And I still own the first volume that I keep on my bookshelf
at
all times.
That thing is beat up. That is authentic. That's old school.
Yeah.
What Chris is talking about, by the way, is Alvin Schwartz is the author of the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series. In a Dark, Dark Room and Other Scary Stories is another book that he wrote, which is a collection of similar stories, but they're not quite as macabre, not quite as gory, and so that's why we kind of chose an easier one to open the hour with. And in fact, Chris, when Megan Mack and I were talking about this series, we both landed on the same story that stood out to us. Now, you guys mentioned high beams, and a lot of people talk about the hook, things like that. Mm-hmm. For me, it was the green ribbon around the neck.
Especially
and I thought that was a Scary Stories one. It turned out that's actually from In a Dark, Dark Room, which Megan and Sasha's opening story is also from. So there's some classics. Anyway, any favorites stand out to you?
The green ribbon actually is my alt. I could do it from memory
now. Isn't that awesome? It's so amazing that. And by the way, Megan does not wear a green ribbon. As much as I've rarely seen her, I've never seen her wearing a green ribbon either. And Zandi DiMatteo is the teen librarian for the Rochester Public Library. Books still there in the library? You haven't banned them?
No, we haven't banned them. And I would say this, that the ironic thing when I went to look for this book was that so many of our copies had gone mysteriously missing. Mm-hmm. Aww. And they will be replaced, but it looks as though at one point Central Library had about 6 copies. So this is a very in-demand book.
Still in demand. Well, I find that interesting. And listeners, I'd love to hear from you this hour. Did you read the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series when you were growing up? Do you let your kids read them? Any reservations about them? As we mentioned, it remains one of the most protested and banned book series, and typically more in rural areas, really heavily, strongly Christian areas that are concerned with some of the images that are considered more satanic or occultist or gory. But there's, you know, there have been protests and complaints just about everywhere about these books. And as I mentioned, the Scarecrow Herald gave me nightmares for a long time. And also is it the toe? Is there somebody's eating a toe or something?
Oh, yeah. They find the big toe and they put it in their soup. And then, like, this monster comes and it, like, kills this kid's family, if I remember. It says, like, where is my toe? But I can't remember if he gets the toe back. I think he, like, flips open the kid or something to get the toe. I can't remember.
Ew.
There's something violent about
I know. There's a lot of gore. There's a lot of eating of flesh. I mean, it's just...
It's fantastic.
Ethan's a big fan. So one of the things to explore is why we like to be scared. And that's going to be the subject in just a second. I do want to let listeners know 2 things here. We just heard from the people who are producing a documentary about Scary Stories. So they're actually on Twitter at... Scary Stories Doc.
Yep.
And they are putting together a documentary. They're out of Chicago. They're putting together a Scary Stories Tell in the Dark documentary that is not out yet, I don't think, but there's a trailer and you can find that online. So hello, Scary Stories Doc, if you're listening online on the WXXI mobile app in Chicago. The question I think I want to start with is, why do we like books like this to begin with? Some of them are gory. Some of them are pretty frightening. I mean, the high beam story, Ethan, you mentioned high beams, and that's one that, if listeners, if you don't remember it, do you want to describe it? I mean, I certainly remember
it. Okay, so... I remember as that, so this young teenage girl, she's driving home, and she's kind of bothered because there's this truck behind her, and every once in a while, it's following her home, and...
Stay on the mic there, man. There you go.
And
go ahead.
It's showing its high beams, and she keeps on getting bothered by it, but it turns out that there's actually a killer in her back seat, so whenever he's about to get up to kill her, the person turns on her high beams to save her.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly the story, yes. And I heard, kind of like Christine mentioned, I'm not sure I read that in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I thought I was told that as a camp story growing up on Chautauqua Lake in the summers. You know, some of these turn into camp stories. And the author, Alvin Schwartz, he would tell you that a lot of the stories are sort of adopted from folklore and whatnot. So it's probably not a surprise, Christine, that a lot of these end up in our minds through other sources. I think I heard High Beams as a camp story.
Yeah, and I was telling these guys when we were coming in, when the book I picked up when I was a kid was by Jan Harold Brunvand, and he's a famous folklorist who collected urban legend. He was one of the first person to really collect American urban legends. And when I studied folklore in college, we talked about all of these all the time. And it's funny how it's it's become such a part of our lives, right? To mm-hmm. the point where I'm letting my 9-year-old read about them. And but, you know, you're right. You tell them at sleepovers and scary stories. And there's underlying lessons and tales about our culture, right?
So, no, it's interesting you say that, because some of the complaints that have come over the years about this series of books, I'll see if I can dig it up. I've got this somewhere. Some of the complaints is that there's nothing. Here it is. This is former elementary school teacher and mother Sandy Vanderberg telling the Chicago Tribune why she was leading a protest against the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series. She writes, there's no moral to these stories. The bad guys always win. They make light of death. There's a story called Just Delicious about a woman who goes to a mortuary, steals another woman's liver, and feeds it to her husband. That's just sick. There's no moral. End quote. So
you know. Oh, but there are so many morals, right? Whether we agree with them or not. Yeah. There's
don't eat liver.
Maybe that's why nobody in my age cohort ever wanted to eat liver,
no. Me included.
You know, for example, The Hook. Ethan and I were talking. What do you want to say? Yeah. What you told me about The Hook, which I agreed with, right? What's the moralistic?
So the whole thing is like The Hook Man and like basically all these stories that take place on Lover's Lane, and the extension basically almost all slasher movies where intercourse leads to death. It's kind of a message about premarital sex, basically, in all these stories that take place on Lover's Lane.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's an old message, but yeah.
That is a 12-year-old just laying it out there straight.
I mean, if you've seen any horror movie ever, that's like the basic rule.
Your grandmother's going to listen to that.
Premarital intercourse leads to your doom.
It does. It's very true. That does not work out well. And Christine, are you just cringing here as a mom?
But there's a lot of grandmothers who would agree with that.
Yeah, he's not wrong, Mom. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong at all.
And I don't agree with this message.
And
agree with the message? No, the message is absolutely true. I regret to inform you. But go ahead.
You know, it's funny because we talk about this, but then when your 12-year-old talks about intercourse on public radio station, then you get a little
not what you expect.
I didn't expect it. But you know, I did bring it up, and I said, Ethan, mm-hmm. do you want to talk about what we talked about? So
yep, this is the most awkward several minutes in the history of this program.
Wow,
I don't feel very awkward. But
actually, the only guy who doesn't feel awkward is Ethan. We're all sitting here like want to crawl into a shell here. Okay, so what we're establishing is that maybe the morals are. That's an interesting moral to take from it. But there are other stories where, is there anything of, you guys have sort of kind of dove back into some of these stories, if you remember over the years. Is there any moral that stands out from these, Zandy?
Well, you guys are talking about Harold, which is where the Scarecrow.
Yes.
The Scarecrow, I want to tell you, is bullied by these two mm-hmm. people.
Okay.
And they beat him up, and they are awful to him. And he takes revenge. And
yes,
one person...
the appropriate response of skinning them alive.
And yeah. Well, one person gets skinned alive. The other is witness to it and lives to tell the tale. Clearly, the moral of that story is don't bully the vulnerable. Of course, the consequences are very harsh and are bullying themselves. But, you know, certainly that would make people think twice.
Okay, so there's one. Chris Fanning, anything stand out to you?
Yeah, I had found a quote, actually, from Schwartz about the books and why he kind of stands by them. And he said, watch out, the world's a dangerous place. You're going out on your own soon. Be careful. So these are just kind of like, you know, there may be a man with a hook trying to get into your car.
Now, hold on. Now, this is where I want to semi-seriously push back a little. I think there's value if people were able to keep that in perspective, Chris.
Yes.
But every year on Halloween... I've worked for commercial television news. There's a cottage industry in making people feel scared that your next door neighbor is going to poison your kids.
Sure. Yeah.
No kid has ever been poisoned by Halloween candy, and no one's ever found a razor blade in a piece of candy. And it needs to be said every year that we overblow this threat, and it's ridiculous. And I feel like this notion of fearing the neighbor four houses down may come from this idea that the world is a dangerous place and everyone's got a hook. And Ethan, are you disagreeing?
I watched this documentary a while back about urban legends and about the legend of how this guy would poison people's candy. And it turned out that back in the 70s, there was this kid and he got a pixie stick and it turns out there's cyanide in it and he died. And there's this whole case and it turns out his father did it. And he got the pixie stick from his father. And but it's like a real thing.
So his father did it.
Yeah, they had footage.
But not the neighbor.
It's not the neighbor.
Now, candy poisoning.
I want to support Ethan on this because I want to tell you something. What is the first thing when somebody is found to be a serial killer and their neighbors get interviewed? They're like, he was always so quiet.
Yeah, every neighbor is always shocked when bad things happen. Like everybody.
Yeah, they always say, oh, he would never do that.
I know. Even Ethan's 12, he knows that's the stock answer. I never thought this would happen here. I never thought someone would put razor blades in candy bars because no one's ever done it. It's never happened. And so, Chris, what I'm saying is this weirder diversion of the conversation.
Uh-huh.
I think Alvin Schwartz is making a point that the world is, you know, you have to take care of yourself in the world.
Yeah.
There are risks and dangers, but are we too frightened of people?
Well, I think it speaks to that. These are scary stories, and they're meant to scare you.
Yes.
And saying these are too scary, the content is too scary, the pictures are too scary, let's put them on a shelf, let's hide them, that only perpetuates fear more, the fear of the unknown. So opening these books and reading them and having a little scare and talking about them kind of brings that out into the light. So it starts a discussion. So I'm all for everybody reading these. I understand that some of the pictures are just...
The pictures. I mean, Zandy's about to go off on the pictures.
I wasn't going to go off
I
on the
love
pictures.
Them.
I think they're perfectly suited to
no,
the stories.
No, I mean, go off on the fact that the newest versions, if you find the new versions, they're kind of the sanitized artwork. The original artwork. Oh, yeah.
I'm all ready to talk about this,
nothing
too.
Against Brett Hellquist, because he did a very great job in many children's books. He is the illustrator of Lemony Snicket, and I'm sure some people would feel outraged if Lemony Snicket were re-released with a different illustrator because his illustrations and his style so perfectly suited the intent and telling of those stories.
Yeah, who's the guy who did the illustrations for?
Stephen Gamell.
Stephen Gamell, his artwork for Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was, to me, just as creepy as the text.
And I will tell you something. He actually was a children's illustrator of picture books who won the Caldecott previous to his stint for Scary Stories. I do think his illustrations are wonderful because if you want a scary story, and these stories are scary, mm-hmm. you don't want illustrations that don't match the intensity of the story.
Yeah, these are, I looked at that. Those are some sanitized illustrations. Can
oh my gosh,
look at one of your copies
wild.
Over there just so I can look at some of the real deal good
illustrations. Oh, no, she's giving you the new one again. Give him the old one. Yeah, give him the real deal so you can see. Listeners, as Ethan fires up the comparison there, I will just tell you again, we're talking Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which turns 35 years old. This year, it was a trilogy. There's three of them, right, guys? There's three books of scary stories. And we're talking about our favorite memories from the books, so why we like being scared, why there's been controversy over the books over the years. On this Halloween, we thought it was a perfect conversation to have. You can call if you'd like, toll free. I want to hear from you. Did you read the books? Are there favorites that stand out to you? 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-99-94. So, Chris Fanning, why do we like to be scared? You loved these books. They're in the top.
I love them.
But why? Especially when you were younger. What was fun about this?
Halloween has always been my favorite holiday. I love Ethan and I can share a lot of similarities. And one of them is our love for Halloween. It was almost like these books were like a challenge in your childhood of bravery. Like, can you look at these? Can you look at that skull? Mm. Hollow-eyed woman from the ghost story about...
And act tough.
Like and spend the night at the sleepover, go into the graveyard with the guys at the end after you've read all these. So it's kind of... I love storytelling. I think it's a really cool craft, and a lot of the stories in these books give kids the power to tell stories. And literally say to them, at this point, jump at your friends and scream, ah, or something like that. So,
like in the big toe one.
Yeah, they're creative. And like I said, I think they kind of give kids power to tell stories and to scare. Yep. Not just to be scared, but also to scare and have fun.
It's like a roller coaster ride, right?
Yes.
Where you feel, you get the rush of adrenaline, but you don't actually fall from a large height. Mm-hmm. You get the rush of what it's like to run from the scary guy, axe murderer, but you close the book and it's okay. It might haunt your dreams, but you know you're going to be okay. So even now when you watch a scary movie, you know, and you jump and then you laugh because it was so hilarious. I think that's something so many people, I know I loved it as a kid.
Right.
Well, and I'll say this. So when we look at these stories, these are folk tales. They've been told and retold and told again. So I want to say that probably from our most primitive times, we've been telling these scary stories around campfire because we're by the campfire. We are safe. We are, of course, going to make better decisions than what's happening in here. They show you bad decisions. They show you bad choices. The terrible, terrible consequences. But the author himself gives absolute credit from where these have come from. And a lot of these are really old stories. Most folk tales are not meant for children. They are instructive. This book also, you are the reader, but you might be the teller, and they give you some stage directions. Mm-hmm. Like when they say, "And now you scream," in parentheses, so that you can be telling the super creepy story, and then you become part of the story and the retelling and stuff.
Yeah, and in Big Toe, like when the monster is going around, "Where is my toe?" You, and at the very end of the story, they say, "At this point, pause, then jump at the person next to you and shout, 'You got it!'"
Ethan.
That's how I ended up. Of course, I didn't have an entire degree in folklore, but I was lucky enough to have a storytelling graduate-level class, and I actually picked this book up at a book sale because it was actually very instructive if you want to be a good storyteller.
Yeah, and I think there's... It's not that storytelling is a lost art, but we love to have stories told to us. I think that's why, as much as we may feel scared, it's fun. I think when kids go to overnight camps, and for all of my camp counselor friends out there, anybody who's ever been a camp counselor, you've been in that position where you think, are the lawyers going to be upset with me if I tell them this story? You know, all of those things that come up where you go, should I be allowed to tell the story? We used to tell the kids stories. We used to go to I worked at Camp Anyasa, the YMCA camp down at Chautauqua Lake, and I really believe the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series inspired us to do some dumb things. Not the least of which is, out in Cattaraugus County, there is, in Frewsburg, this tiny town called Frewsburg, out on Frew Run Road, which, as the story goes out forever, and you only can go there in the middle of the night, there is a cemetery for children built on this hillside. Really awful place. I mean, sad. It's a real place called Guernsey Hollow, on Guernsey Hollow Road. And the idea was, you got to get up to Guernsey Hollow. There's a big white cross in the back. Touch the cross and get out of there. And the first time we went, of course, the car lights go off. You leave the car lights on the hill. Everyone's freaking out. And what do I tell the kids when we get back? Well, I jumped over the gate at full speed to get back to the car and cut my side. And when I got back to the car, in blood, there were children's handprints all over.
Oh, my God.
Is that true? No, that's not true. But I think Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark inspired these weird adventures we had. And the question is that really a healthy thing to be doing? Am I overanalyzing this, Christine? Is it just fun?
I don't think it's overanalyzing. I think kids are going to do those whether they read the book or not. They're going to hear these stories because they're folk tales. But even if they don't, I think kids want to push the boundaries. And I think reading this story, again, for kids, it makes them feel like I'm doing something I shouldn't do. Where really they're reading and learning about, in certain ways about, our society. And I think whether they read or not, everyone's going to end up at a graveyard, except my son.
Except for our regular walks to the graveyard
by yourself with your friends. Yeah, and we're all gonna do those dumb things. So I think
Admitting with your 12-year-old in the room, you've done some of those dumb things. Hold on, Ethan. Let her answer this one.
I'll just say I did dumb things like we all did, right?
Yeah.
And I think to say, the books solely inspired it. I don't want to lay the blame on the books because I think we're going to do them anyway.
Yeah.
I do want to say, as a librarian, I could be giving your kid this book because librarians, we basically like to give kids the books they ask for.
Right.
Now, I think the tipping point with this book is it depends on the kid and it depends on the family and how involved they are. And obviously, Ethan and his mom are a prime example of somebody who's reading way ahead, but there's also really healthy discussions about stuff. And that is, of course, that is how we say we don't want censorship in our libraries and how we defend the materials we have on our shelves.
Yep. Kristen, you want to weigh in there?
I was just thinking about stupid things that you do when you're young. And if any of my friends from Geneva are listening, there used to be this house on the other side of Seneca Lake called Hell House or Satan House. And, you know, you would drive out there at dusk to go into Hell House. And it was a run-down, abandoned, you know, it was super dangerous to go into.
There all right, no so floor. If you're telling the story, let's tell the story. Where is this exactly? It's on Seneca Lake?
It's out on the other side of Seneca Lake.
What's the other side? What does that mean?
Opposite
east
of
side?
Geneva, yeah. West side.
West side?
West side. No, east side. It is east side.
Okay.
I don't know if it's even still there, and I feel bad.
Was it
up.
On the lake?
It was, no, on not on the side facing the lake, on the other side of the road.
Okay, so this dilapidated house.
Yeah.
And what are you supposed to do, go in?
You go in, and you walk around, and some of the floors were missing. You
so
know,
very safe.
Super, super unsafe. And we were going out there, you know, for hours to go hang out just because we could. And you couldn't really go at night because it was so dangerous, but... you know, I'm sure anyone from Geneva listening knows somebody or went out there with their friends.
Yeah. If there's an unsupervised space, that pretty much teenagers are going to want to be in it. That's just a fact of life, people.
The question is, can we get past this without actually doing that? Does it have to be a rite of passage to do these dumb things? Here's Kelly on Twitter. She says, I read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark by the age of 9, then leapt right to Stephen King by the age of 10.
There you are. Yes, she Kelly,
says,
yes.
She says, I still love Scary and Macabre. I'm now a nearly 40-year-old mother of 4. My kids do like spooky stories, but I blanch at the idea of my 10-year-old self reading Stephen King. What were my parents thinking? So we had a 12-year-old. Christina, can he read Stephen King right now?
I just bought him his first Stephen King book the other day.
What?
Yes, we started with Eyes of the Dragon.
Oh, that's
not
perfect.
That's
great.
Scary.
No, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, but good introduction to Randall Flagg.
The real good ones. Yeah, I already have a friend who's read several of them. Like, my friend at school has read The Green Mile.
Oh. When I was in 7th grade, we had Pet Sematary, and it was on the free reading shelf. We had a
7th grade
Rockport High. Thank you. Rockport. Yeah, that was the middle school actually, and I will tell you, boys who didn't want to read were reading Stephen King books because they have the bad words in them and they were super scary. So, I mean, for me, I'm like, "Hey, you're reading."
Uh-huh.
That's my attitude.
Yeah, well, that is true. Kelly, by the way, follows up on Twitter to say, who hasn't tried the Bloody Mary mirror chant at a sleepover?
I never have.
Kelly, I have
no,
not because
haven't.
I was convinced it was going to happen.
Same.
And that was like, you know, I would have felt guilty if I called in some satanic force and it murdered the whole house.
Have you done it, though?
No.
Would you do it now?
Would I do it now?
Yeah, now that you're a responsible,
an adult,
well-rounded.
No, because I'm not an irrational... That's ridiculous.
I've never done that.
It's not because I'm scared.
I actually have done that.
You've done that, Ethan?
Yeah, it was years ago, but I just
in our house.
Yeah.
Well, that explains
yes,
all those
I'm
weird
sorry.
Things.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I guess that explains my sister.
All right.
I'm sorry. Okay, that
all right. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're late for our only break of the hour. You are hearing from a 12-year-old Ethan, who is an aficionado of not only Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, but also wisdom on all levels, apparently. His mother is Christine Green, literary arts columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Zandy DiMatteo is here, teen librarian for the Rochester Public Library. Chris Fanning is here from Writers and Books. And we're talking Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. When we come back, I'll read another section, one of my favorites, not quite as gory and strange as we've been hearing. Now, listen. If you object to this stuff, if you think this is over the line or too weird, I do want to give voice to some of the protest that's out there. Or if you just want to weigh in with what you liked about these stories, what do you remember in particular? It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections, first hour. At a Wisconsin football game this weekend, someone dressed as Donald Trump holding a noose around the neck of Hillary Clinton. Police said it's free speech. They could ask him to stop, but he's got a right to express himself. But people have been wondering, when does it become hate speech or threatening speech? We examine. Then second hour, no questions in the debates on climate change. Well, we'll talk about those issues if the debates won't. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Eileen on Twitter says, fantastic beginning to today's Connections with Megan Mack and Evan Dawson. I picked a good day to take vacation. WXXI rocks. Thank you, Eileen.
Yeah.
Good stuff there. Very good. Let me go ahead and read one of my favorites that is not all that gory. This is the kind of thing that I did dig stories like these. The eating the toe and the liver stuff, that was not for me. This one is the girl who stood on a grave. And it's not a long one. Some boys and girls were at a party one night. There was a graveyard down the street. And they were talking about how scary it was. "Don't ever stand on a grave after dark," one of the boys said. "The person inside will grab you. He'll pull you under." "That's not true," one of the girls said. "That's just a superstition." "I'll give you a dollar if you stand on a grave," said the boy. "A grave doesn't scare me," said the girl. "I'll do it right now." The boy handed her his knife. And he told her, "Stick this knife in one of those graves. Then we'll know you were there." The graveyard was filled with shadows and was as quiet as death. "There's nothing to be scared of," the girl told herself, but she was scared anyway. She picked out a grave and stood on it. Then quickly she bent over and plunged the knife into the soil, and she started to leave. But she couldn't get away. Something was holding her back. She tried a second time to leave, but she couldn't move. She was filled with terror. "Something has got me," she screamed, and she fell to the ground. When she didn't come back, the others went to look for her. They found her body sprawled across that grave. Without realizing it, she had plunged the knife through her skirt and had pinned it to the ground. It was only the knife that had held her, and she had died of fright. Okay, see, not gory. Spooky, but not gory.
Dying of fright.
Now, I'm curious if your book has an illustration for this. Because this illustration is...
This one?
Yes, my book's got an illustration. Now, Chris, this is not great radio, talking about the illustration.
No, I know. But please, if you're listening and you haven't looked into the difference between the new edition and the classic ones, the illustrations are really, really...
Yeah. I mean, that's a fabulous
different.
Illustration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She
really
looks
is.
Very organic. She looks like she's become part of the landscape.
That's another great point. Just sort of the lines of the drawings of this article, of this illustrator, his lines did make it look like the characters almost blended into the...
Yeah.
Yeah, very... very distinctive. So
you can look it up online. You could Google it and find all the comparisons.
Yeah, but
I
now
promise.
It's turned into sanitized stories to tell in the dark.
Ethan is complaining about sanitized. Well, hold on. I want to get on this subject. Julian Pittsford wants to talk about which stories she feels she can read. Go ahead, Julie.
So I first heard Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark in fourth grade in library, and I remember it very, very clearly. They were so good and so scary. But I've just recently started reading them to my kids who are in second and fourth grade, and I really feel like I have to pick and choose, particularly for the second grader, just to make sure that I'm not terrifying them too much.
So you pre-read and then just sort of select out that way, yeah?
Yeah.
It
turns out there's also an I Can Read version, which doesn't have the great illustrations.
That is the one you mentioned first.
Oh.
I'm sorry?
That we mentioned that at the top, Scary Stories to Tell in a Dark, Dark Room.
In a Dark, Dark Room.
Yeah, it's called In a Dark, Dark Room and Other Scary Stories. Yeah, that's more of the, again, we kind of called it the training wheel Scary Stories. And Julie, that's the one that I'd sort of be down with starting with for my kids. So,
But they love, like, the one with the toe and you scream and you say, "You got it." They love that. They jumped out of their skins and they adored it.
Sure.
Julie, are any of them too gory for you, looking back now?
You know, there's one with the bloody, for the thumb.
Yeah, the thumb.
That one where they make a stew out of the thumb.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
For the toe, the big toe.
Give me back my toe.
That one was a little much, I think.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Julie. I think I'm right on board with Julie. A lot of fun. A little pre-screening as a parent. Christine, what's wrong with that?
I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I think you have to know your kid, you know, and you have to be involved, right? I mean, some kids might be reading this that are just too sensitive and I don't say too in a negative way. They're just not ready. For example, my daughter is 15, you know, she's a high schooler and now she loves all this stuff. But when she was Ethan's age, this was scary for her. She couldn't have read this. She read a couple and stopped. She said she stopped at High Beams and then picked it up a couple years later because she just was a little more scared in the night and had a little more anxiety. And I think that's the right thing. This kid, it was hard in a very literal sense he would get a book from the library and read it before he got home. And you know what I mean? Or he would just get a hold of a book on a shelf and read it before we knew he read it. So he was a little harder, and he wasn't scared by things. So I knew what he could handle.
I wonder if these books, are they responsible for us believing in things like ghosts and things that are not true, are totally not true, and absolutely not real? I'm sorry. I am the wet blanket on ghosts. I love the ghost hunter stories. I'm like, they should call it scam hunters. But anyway, I am the wet blanket. Zandy, you're going to come on, bring it back, Zandy.
There are
more
things on heaven and earth, sir. I would say that there's always been the unknown. Who knows what exists out beyond the flames of the campfire, man? You just don't know. There could be forces at work.
Well, let me give you an example, though, of the baloney that's out there.
Okay.
Megan Mack, who's a producer, who's not actually in a grave right now, and she is a real person, and I'm looking at her right now. She sent me a note on one of the stories from book 3 of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark called The Trouble. Mm-hmm. It's based on true events. It's about a family who witnesses furniture and objects in their house moving and eventually flying out at each other. And police investigated. The eventual explanation, and this is Megan's note, so I'm just reading from your note here, in real life, right? Real life explanation was that a teenage poltergeist had been at work, moving the objects with mental power. Let me just say, if that were true, it'd be the biggest news story in history.
Yeah.
Of the whole world. A teenage poltergeist moving furniture around, like playing Parcheesi. You know, like that would be a huge, huge story. But I wonder, Zanny doesn't like my negativity.
Oh, no. That's not my... I was going to say, at the Central Library, we've got some bread and butter going on by having a haunted building, the Rundell Building. And, you know, there's a door that swings open mysteriously.
Sure there is.
Spooky. You know, everybody's like, what do you think? Do you think that's a ghost? And I'm like, I think it's an old building and the floors aren't very level is what I think.
You know? See? You're
so
ruining the fun.
I know. I'm a ruiner.
Well, that technically makes you the perfect candidate to be approached by the supernatural, I think.
Of course.
Same with you.
What are you talking about?
The disbeliever is usually the one that has to come face to face.
I see. You're saying that there is supernatural and they're going to come pick on me for being a skeptic.
Well, I think you should do Bloody Mary in the mirror tonight and see.
Yeah, because you're not scared of Bloody
Because you're not scared.
Mary.
Yeah.
Or Red Rum, is that another?
That's The Shining.
That's from The Shining.
Yeah, Red Rum.
You haven't seen that yet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's time for that. Now, there's a read.
Christine will draw the line on The Shining right now. Yeah.
Isn't that murder backwards?
Yes.
There you go.
Maybe it's not
too early.
I was
like, how does this relate to spooky things?
Nothing gets past Ethan.
Well, you know, some people get more scared. You know, my daughter's told me now that the ghost stories don't scare her. Things like high beams scared her.
Sure.
And the hook scared her because there are actual serial killers in the world, right? There are crazy people. And so...
That's why this book kind of
appeals to all the scared, because you may not believe in ghosts, but you know that there are crazy people, right? Yeah. And I shouldn't say crazy, but like unstable killers out there.
And I'll say this, too. You know, by the time you're in second grade, you know that bad things happen. And you know that sometimes not all the people doing the bad things get in trouble for it. Like, right? Like when you're a kid and some kid does something wrong and they get away with it and you're like, but wait a minute,
that's not how mom told me things work.
That's right, exactly. So by the time you're in second grade, you start to figure out. But I also think that a lot of people want to be open to those paranormal possibilities. Maybe we know they're not going to happen. If you have a specific thing, you're like, yeah, I don't know about this thing. But you don't know about what else might be out there. And, like, I've gone to slumber parties where we've used a Ouija board because if you don't have a Ouija board, you're at the wrong slumber party.
I don't even think it's a slumber party if you don't have a Ouija board.
Exactly. One time I tried... one time I tried a Ouija board, but, like, me and my... Okay.
Ethan, you have a lot of time alone, don't you?
Okay.
Yeah,
So it was like... And people.
It's a short story, right?
Yeah, it's a short thing. And everybody was like, and we're going to be like, real, okay, you're not going to push the thing. And we all swear that nobody was going to push the thing, and nobody pushed the thing, and the thing didn't move, and we all just kind of stood there awkwardly because nobody was moving the thing.
You got to move the thing.
Because whenever you're using a Ouija board, it's always just one of your friends moving the thing.
The planchette.
Exactly.
Let me at least put in a vote for stories like High Beams and The Hook as being the most scary, because for me, they are the most realistic.
Yeah,
High Beams is a story that once you hear that, the next few times you get into your car at night, you're going to look in the back seat.
That's a few times.
I've been there. I've done it.
Still.
That means you didn't pay attention, because if you pay attention to the story, you know you just keep your car locked, and then somebody can't get in without breaking a window and some obvious signs of forced entry.
All right, so you're saying that's the, another one of the moral?
Yeah. And the girl on the grave, be careful what you do for a dollar, dude.
All right, so by the end of the hour, Zandy DiMatteo is going to reposition Alvin Schwartz as like this great American moralist. It's really unexpectedly.
No, you get to make up the moral. It's your decision as the reader. He's putting the power in your hands.
Yeah, don't do dumb things for a dollar.
Okay.
Okay. All right. No, I'm down. But I think of something like high beams, and I think that to me is scary.
Yeah.
The hook is scary. Yeah. Those are the kind of things that are really spooky to me, as opposed to this weird eating a liver that's just sort of gross or that kind of stuff.
But there's still value in the kind of the shock horror that it is, because a lot of people have kind of devalued, and I do kind of think that shock horror, where it's just, oh, gross, is a lesser form of horror. But there's still some genuine stuff in it, like... I mean, but a lot of times stuff like that isn't good because you don't effort. You just got to show some bloody liver and then, bam, people got scared. You don't need to put tension or suspense. It's just, bam, bloody liver.
And I think you're making a good point. I think that's some of the stories are meant to do different things. The shock, the gore is not as designed to be really spine-tinglingly spooky.
True.
Here's Jordan in Rochester writing in saying, we as people are designed to want to overcome challenges. It's why we play sports or climb mountains or play challenging video games. My take on anything scary is it's a challenge to overcome. Kids want that as much as adults. Also, Ethan is fantastic.
Here, here.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with Jordan on every level.
Thank you, Jordan. You're a cool person.
Back to the phones. This is Francis in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Francis.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
Lots of Chris's. Go ahead.
About high beams being like that ilk being the scariest. I just want to say like high beams is the reason I to this day always check the back of my car when I'm coming back in the dark. Like always. I was in like if I don't check it when I will pull over and like look. Like that is just stuck with me.
Absolutely. So as Chris pointed out, Francis, it wasn't just like the first few times you checked your car. You're still doing it today.
I'm still doing it today.
Excellent.
I mean, I read this when I was like, you know, like a kid. I didn't even have a car at that point.
Sure. See, okay. Well, thank you, Francis. And I think of another story that wasn't in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, but it's a story that I first heard as a camper, later told as a counselor, that was based on a movie called The Hitcher. And The Hitcher was about a serial killer who you don't want to pick him up because things don't go well. Mm-hmm. And really a torturous killer, by the way. An ugly, gory movie, not worth watching. But I had this camp counselor named Sean Goodman who was this remarkable storyteller. And I can still in my head, as Ethan's age, probably 12 years old, laying in a cabin at Camp Anyasa, I can still hear his voice in the dark telling that story. And me looking at the ceiling going, how many hours till sunlight? You know. But the impact of a story like The Hitcher or a movie like The Hitcher is, I would bet hitchhiking, which was much more common in my dad's age and much less common now, it became this thing that you don't do, probably not because people are really actually terrible, but because these stories are out there about scary people to pick up or scary people who pick up hitchhikers.
But now we have Uber rides.
There will be, in Scary Stories Tell in the Dark 4, there will be an Uber.
Yes.
But before you know it, it'll be 2166. It'll be Scary Story, even more scaries to tell in the dark 4 by Alvin Schwartz the 18th. There'll be a story about Uber.
Uber will be long gone by then. But don't we think that those are the kinds of things that actually can have a societal impact? Well, some scary stories change the way we think about getting into your car at night, looking in the back seat. Do you pick up a hitchhiker?
Right.
So we talk about like just having fun with it, but sometimes they actually change behavior, I think. Is that wrong?
Yeah.
You've never picked up a hitchhiker.
Yeah, I
can guarantee but I have a similar thing because you can go first.
Thanks. now I'm losing my train of thought because this kid for 12 years I've been losing my train of thought because of him. I think, you know, it's this fear of the outside and the other. And so, yeah, there's this kind of moralistic same thing when we talked about the beginning is don't trust strangers, don't trust the outside world, stay within your family, stay very quiet. So I think...
Be observant.
So the hitcher... There's even the ghosty one where they pick up the hitchhiker that disappears. Is that in the scary story, too?
It's one where you pick up a hitchhiker and you go to drop her off, and then she's disappeared.
The
and
girl
you find
in
out
the prom dress.
The girl in the prom dress
coming
she's
home.
Died.
Mm-hmm. Prom.
Right?
And you go,
is that one of the scary stories
off
to tell in the
she
dark?
She died
yeah.
25 years ago.
So you picked up legend. A ghost. So you picked up a ghost, right? Or you picked up a crazy right. hitchhiker. So I think there is some impact. You know, there's even though Ethan said that there was a poison pixie stick. That didn't really happen, right? There is, but do I check my kids' candy every year? I do, right? So
you check our candy.
I think of course I check your candy. So I think they do have some of these stories and tales do have societal impact like that.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes left here. So any other favorites from the books here? I mean, Chris, you know, I know you as an aficionado. Any other standouts?
You know, I was. Looking over some this morning before work, and there was one I had forgotten about, and it's not one that really stands out to me, but when I reread it, I loved it, and it's called On Sunday Morning, and this churchgoer wakes up late, and she thinks she's late for church, so she runs to the church, and it's still dark out, and she gets in there, and she sits down, and she realizes, she starts looking around, and something's not right. The people are a little sluggish, and then she starts really looking at them, and there's some skeletons, and then she realizes she's sitting next to her friend, I think her name is like Ida, who died a month ago, and Ida says, "You're at the wrong service. Get up slowly and go home." And so she, you know, she's trying to go slow, but her heart is racing, and she gets up, and she starts running out, and they all chase after her, and then the sun comes up, and they all go away. Love it.
You love that one?
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot
I hate
like,
when that happens.
Sounds a lot like the Thriller video.
Yeah.
Which also, by the way, is just another example of how all these things just blend together. How many different versions of these stories are out there?
Yeah.
And why does Alvin Schwartz get all the credit for bringing... Well, he's smart enough to bring them together.
He
I guess,
it.
In
yeah.
a series of books. Zandy?
Alvin Schwartz, it should be noted, started life as a journalist.
Yes.
And
Binghamton,
then, Binghamton.
Right?
And
Binghamton.
And then he, local hero. And then he had this researching job that he hated, who hasn't had that job. And so then he loved researching, and he researched these stories. And I think that he would be delighted to know this is his legacy,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Still alive.
No, he died in 1992, allegedly.
Did he?
See, I'm sorry.
So did all the sequels and stuff came out in the span of time?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
He put out three books for sure.
Yep.
I feel like someone should pick that up, you know?
I feel like you should stand in front of the mirror and say Alvin Schwartz's name backwards tonight. Just to see what happens.
I don't know how you say Alvin Schwartz backwards.
He's going to come back as a journalist and make you do boring research projects.
Eventually it'll pay off and I'll be talked about on a radio show.
Yeah.
You're already talked about. Your 15 minutes is almost up, yeah. my friend.
I do want to say from a librarian standpoint, because when I was in grad school, I was lucky enough to work in a children's room at the Webster Public Library. And when kids asked for scary books, we would, of course, go. And I would show them Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, or I would show them the
In
a Dark, Dark Room. And I would say, which one of these would you prefer? Because they've got such great visual cues.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the kids who really want the scary stuff, you can deliver. And the kids who are like, no, that's a step too far for me, you can give them In a Dark, Dark Room.
Hmm.
Can I just say this? In a Dark, Dark Room is pretty lame.
Well, you're
not.
Only 12,
it
man.
Not.
It's
not,
and it's
that's
got the
fair.
Green ribbon story. All of
yeah.
your cool cred just went out the window.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you had, wow. you know.
Wait till you
were so
have
close.
Kids.
You just spent a lot of capital.
Was
that
a mom
that
thing
one.
To say or what? Wait
just,
till you have kids.
All right, just because you didn't need the training wheels, dude.
Yeah.
All right, so here's, I just want to get Melissa's email. And Melissa just writes, I'm sorry. She says, I'm one of the rare people who loved Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, but I'm not okay with horror movies. They're much more serious to me, left some bad memories. I guess I'm not the kind of person who can transition from those stories to movies like Halloween. Am I rare? That's from Melissa.
I'd love to answer that. I think with these, and especially other short stories, it's easy to, like you said earlier, you can read them, and if you reach a point, you put it down, and you're done, like your daughter mm-hmm. did. She realized she wasn't ready for it. Whereas with a movie like Halloween, you're sitting down for 90 minutes committing to this kind of psychological slasher movie.
Yeah, I can't handle scary movies, but I love scary stories. I read some very super violent horror stuff for my own personal reading choices, But scary movies, no way.
But why, Zanny? I mean, this is exactly what Melissa, the emailer, is saying, but why is that for you?
It's too much in the now, I think. You know, I mean, like, well, Halloween, like, I wouldn't have been, that wouldn't, I was young when that came out, younger when that came out. I wouldn't have related to it as well. But if it's something, like, if it's something terrible that happens to a single woman who's living on her own and,
working in a
you
library,
know, it's coming out of the TV or something like that.
Huh. So. Well, our mind puts our, I think, our own limits on when we're imagining, right?
Like, yeah.
We know where we can go, usually, in terms of our imagination. But when it's laid out in color video right in front of you, you're no longer, yeah. You know, maybe if you read about Michael Myers, he would just look like some guy on the street. But you see him on TV with this mask, this knife. It's a whole other mm-hmm. level of.
Yeah. Like if you're, or even like as Ethan mentioned, getting desensitized to stuff. If you're watching CSI and it's a body with maggots in it, or it's like some kind of something that's decomposed into a tub or something like that, and it's kind of like a some sort of disgusting organic soup. Yeah, that is much more. I don't know. It's much more real than like reading about it. That was a Bones episode, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right.
Well, actually, I just have one observation.
You get to close the show. Go
the
ahead, man.
Things is that. Say when you're going in a movie theater with your friends, you feel like you made a commitment. You bought, you went out here, you paid this money, and now you have to. And now, say with a book, you have to finish this. You got to go through. You spent money on this. You got some popcorn. You brought your friends with you. But say when you're reading a book, you can just close it, pick it up later, or return it, or sell it to some cheap schmuck. You can't. But you can't sell your movie experience.
That's
some
wow.
cheap schmuck.
That's true.
Well, and with that, we've got to close the program. Wow. I just want to thank all of the guests, even Ethan. Ethan Green. Thank you, Ethan.
Thank you.
Had fun having you here.
I too.
And Christine Green, literary arts columnist for the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Very nice seeing you here. Zandy DiMatteo, teen librarian for the Rochester Public Library. Thank you, Zandy.
Oh, thank you.
And Chris Fanning. From Writers and Books, always fun. Thank you.
I've been looking forward to this. This is great.
I loved this conversation. Happy Halloween, everyone, if you're out there celebrating. Rob Braden is dressed as an engineer. Megan Mack dressed merely as a producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you